T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Joining us on the line is president of the Erie Niagara School Superintendents Association, Michael Cornell, talking about a number of issues. But Michael, I want to start with something we've been kind of looking at throughout the entire week here on WBEN, and that is just gun violence in America. And, you know, when it comes to schools and kids, we know a lot of things have changed over the last decade, over the last even 20 years when it comes to school security. You know, before we get into what school might look like in the fall, how has, you know, security at schools changed over the last decade because of some of the things we've seen just around the country over the last, you know, 10, 20 years?
Good morning to you both. Oh, my goodness. Where do I start? You know, everything from, I heard your earlier report about lockdown drills and shelters in place and, you know, the way you enter school. I mean, that, you know, 20 years ago, you could walk into a school in any door at any time of day. You know, it was much more, I think, welcoming to the public. And, you know, these days you, like in the Hamburg schools, in our school district, you need to have, in order to enter any of our schools, if you're not a student or a staff member, you need to have a photo ID. You have to go through two sets of locked doors. You have to see somebody in person at the front door. We run your license to make sure, and we run it through a system to make sure that, you know, we get information about if you're, you know, a sex offender or something like that, so we're not letting somebody like that into our schools. You know, we try to strike a balance between making sure the buildings are secure without making them feel like prisons. And that's a balance I think all school districts try to strike. You know, we try to make sure that we have, you know, the requisite number of drills, but do it in an age-appropriate way. You know, but the reality of it is, you know, as a school superintendent, you know, the most important job I have every single day is to send every child and every staff member home to their family safely in the evening. And, you know, that's a responsibility that all superintendents take seriously. And, you know, that job gets a little bit harder each day.
Throughout Erie and Niagara counties, how common are metal detectors at schools?
Not very.
Why is that?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I don't know. I don't have a great answer for that. I think that there are lots of other experts around that one. But, you know, I think the look and the feel of, you know, children walking through a metal detector to get into their school, you know, just feels like it takes away from the welcoming environment that you need to have in terms of the way school feels to kids. I mean, the way school feels to kids is important. You know, that's why we focus so much on a culture of kindness and you know, some of those other things that we focus on in terms of mental and emotional well-being. You know, if school, I just think that, you know, from an emotional perspective, if you're going to try to ask students to be open and available emotionally to learning, it gets a lot more difficult if you ask them to do that while they walk through a metal detector in the morning.
Michael, want to talk about what the current picture is when it comes to these COVID guidelines heading into the fall, because we are getting closer and closer, and, you know, you hear the stories more and more. And it kind of seems like the hopes of whether it's local control or whether a totally normal school year could happen are maybe dwindling just a little bit. Where's your feeling on this, and what have you, if anything, heard from the state since we last spoke?
You know, we've had some informal conversations with the state in my role at the New York State Council of School Superintendents. You know, I think what I, where my head is at right now, when I look at what the CDC put out and what the American Academy of Pediatrics put out, the one area of consensus between the two documents is that they unequivocally talk about the importance of 5 days a week learning for every single child. You know, the cost of intermittent learning caused by hybrid learning models, you know, to the mental and emotional and academic well-being of students certainly, you know, was not justified. So I think that their unequivocal commitment to helping schools be open 5 days a week makes it highly unlikely that we'd repeat the mistake of leaving the liquor stores open 7 days a week, but school available to kids 2 days a week. It makes that highly unlikely. So I take some comfort in what I've seen in those guidance documents. It's also important to remember that those guidance documents are put out for states with 34% infection rate or vaccination rates in states like New York, which are, you know, 75%. So, you know, some states are coming back to school next week. We've got 6 weeks left, so we've got a little bit of time here to see how things unfold. And, you know, the other thing to keep in mind is there are millions of kids around the country, you know, maybe a million here in New York State, you know, 10,000 kids here in Western New York who are learning today in our schools without masks and without physical distancing requirements. So we'll have an opportunity to see exactly what the impact of the Delta variant is on young people, you know, while we're learning in that type of a situation. And thus far, you know, we haven't had any significant challenges with infections in our school settings. So we certainly hope that that continues, and we take every other mitigation strategy seriously, you know, around that. So we're encouraged by where we are.
What was your reaction when you saw yesterday that New York City teachers and other public workers will be under vaccine mandates soon, or a weekly test?
You know, I thought that was interesting. I haven't had a chance to look into the details of it or have a lot of conversation around it, but I thought it was an interesting approach. And, you know, it's difficult to know exactly what the state's perspective is going to be around that. I mean, they've got a lot of inputs now, right? They've got the CDC, they've got the AAP, they've got what de Blasio did in New York City. So, you know, given those inputs, it'll be interesting to see how the state weighs those inputs along with the data that they get from the kids who are actually learning right now in mask-free environments without physical distancing requirements. So there's a lot for the state to consider as they decide what type of guidance, if any, they want to put out. What we've encouraged the state to think about is the idea of contingency guidance rather than emergency guidance. There is no state of emergency right now in New York State. You know, this time last year there was. So what we've encouraged them to consider is the idea of guidance that would be, you know, schools would participate in regional mitigation strategies if a region hit a certain level of infection per 100,000, a certain level of hospitalization, and you know, you could also take into consideration vaccination rate. If vaccination is the greatest protective factor, then that should be taken into consideration when a region might have to undertake regional mitigation strategies. But I think it's really important that the state start with the why, with whatever guidance they give us. It has to be purpose-driven. They have to start with the why. You know, people don't always react to being told what to do first. I think they're, you know, people respond much better with the why. Here's the purpose. Here's how we'll know if we've achieved the purpose with whatever mitigation strategies the state wants us to implement come September.
You know, we had a discussion with Mark Laurie up in Niagara Falls about a week ago and kind of talking about what the picture might look like. And he's been an advocate for having, you know, local control, local school districts make their own decisions. And it's something you talked about just a short while ago when you were mentioning that, you know, this guidance is being put on areas with a very high infection rate and with a very low infection rate, and, you know, that need to consider more than one thing. Also considering the burdens of face masks in schools. There's often so many people talking about it like, well, just put a mask on in school. What's the big deal? You're just wearing a mask. You know, kids can be in school. But there are things when it goes into learning, you know, emotions less recognizable. There's, an inability to communicate, interpret things in the same way from teachers and from students. Are we able to have, you know, an honest discussion about the benefits and burdens of face masks in schools without just, you know, kind of defaulting to that position that everyone seems to have dug their heels into?
You know, that's a really good question. I think communities are well enough equipped to be able to have that conversation. I think Mark is right when he says that we've hit the point in the arc of the pandemic where a lot of these decisions should be made by superintendents and local school boards. One of the things that I've learned as I read is that outbreaks in areas with high rates of vaccination are going to be very, very localized. And school districts, I think, have all the tools they need to deal with a localized outbreak of COVID, whether we have to implement a mask mandate, if we have to do some type of physical distancing, if we have to move to a remote situation for some period of time. I mean, we've always had the ability to close schools in New York State. We typically associate that type of closing with a snow day. But school districts have a great deal of flexibility in terms of dealing with localized circumstances. So I think Mark has a point when he talks about, maybe we've reached the point where a lot of these things should be decided by local school districts.
But do you fear, though, that local decision, you might not be able to make that local decision, the decision may be made for you?
I don't know that I fear it necessarily. I accept it as a potential challenge. We figure out how to get through it. That's the way we've been doing this for 18 months. And, you know, at this point, you know, all we can do is plan for everything. You know, it's very difficult to predict what the state's going to do. It's very difficult to predict what COVID is going to do, what impact COVID is going to have on kids or a school or a local community. So given that, all you can do is be ready for everything, be able to adapt, and keep the main thing the main thing. And the main thing is we have to take care of every child every day. We school districts have been the most responsive form of government in terms of being able to, respond to the unique needs of children and families. And that's what we need to keep our eye on. I mean, we can't control what the state's going to do. You know, we try to provide some influence and some insight in terms of what it looks like in the field with real kids and real teachers and real families. But at the end of the day, the state's going to do what the state's going to do. And our job is to make sure that that doesn't get in the way of taking care of every child every day, because that's the obligation we always have, is to make sure every child has a great learning experience every day, to make sure they enjoy school, they enjoy their friends, they enjoy learning, and they look forward to coming back to do it the next day, regardless of what the barriers the state might put in front of us.
Michael, thank you so much for all the time this morning. Always great to talk with you and try and get some insight as to what the fall will look like. That's Michael Cornell, president of the Erie Niagara School Superintendents Association, joining us live.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!